If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is the Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
The Sound Podcast is part of the OSIRIS Network. OSIRIS is creating a community that connects people like you with podcasts and live experiences about artists and topics you love. We'll be doing many live events this summer around the country, which will include artist interviews, contests, and more. Sign up for our newsletter at OSIRISpod.com to stay in the loop. Relics Magazine is a media partner of OSIRIS. For more, visit relics.com. The show starts now. You've been listening to Immovable Objects from Circles Around the Sun's forthcoming record, Let It Wander, a record you must hear in its entirety. Truth be told, when the album showed up in my inbox a few weeks ago, I was psyched to check it out. Circles, or Cats, is undoubtedly one of my favorite acts going right now. They are a four-piece instrumental jam band. On the surface, knowing that Neil Casale and Adam McDougall, Dan Horn, and Mark Levy are the players in the band, you're likely to think this is some hippie outfit performing jams straight out of a Dead show. Truth is, while those sorts of sonic landscapes are very much part of their sound, this record, Let It Wander, is filled with all kinds of jams from all sorts of different genres. We recently sat down with Adam McDougall, the keyboard player in the group, who also performs with Neil Casale and Chris Robinson's Brotherhood, to talk about Let It Wander and making Cats a full-time thing. In fact, when we spoke with Adam, he was in Carolina hanging out before a CRB show. Our conversation started when I gushed to Adam about how great I thought the record was. So I've had my own little obsession for a couple of days now. And it is Cats and Let It Wander, because
you like that. You got the whole record.
It's easily the top five record of the year for me thus far. Without a doubt, it is amazing.
I was just listening to it the other night on August 1st. My birthday was yesterday.
Oh, the day
and
after.
And then August 1st is Jerry Day, right? Jerry Garcia. Right. Everyone's Jerry Day, but also Chuck D's birthday.
Oh, aha. Now I get it.
Jerry Garcia and Chuck D share the same birthday, and the drummer and CRB's wife.
And the Sound Podcast photographer. So really, it is a brilliant day, August 1st. It really is.
Is it your birthday as well?
Not mine, but we have a photographer on staff, and it's his birthday. So it really is, it's a special day, I guess. More special now.
I think when everyone's like, hey, fucking happy Jerry Day, you just be like, Chuck D Day, dude. It's Chuck D's birthday. That's how you get it.
Right.
That dude is super rad.
You have to be of a certain vintage to get that, I think.
Yeah, but we're all kind of in there.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. I just turned 44, for God's sake. Jesus Christ.
You're ahead of me just by a little bit. And I'll let you have it. I'll let you have that one.
That sounds more like a losing than a winning. I feel like I'm winning, but I'm actually losing.
Yeah. Well, it's just time. That's all it is. You're just losing more time. That's all.
Yeah, that's the only thing you just can't get back ever. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's get back to Cats. You know, the first record, I think, came together pretty quickly. And as the story goes, there were these Fare Thee Well shows, and Neil was asked to compose some music. And he assembled this band, and you guys improvised a bunch of stuff, real brilliant stuff, great stuff that people really enjoyed during set breaks of Fare Thee Well. And then, of course, when you released the record. But this record came together probably a little differently, right?
Yeah, the first record was basically we were asked to do pretty much 6 hours of music in 2 days. So it's kind of impossible to even listen back to a track that you've played. Because right. we're doing long tracks, so you're trying to play for 20 minutes, which is really hard to do. Because when you're playing music, time gets really slow, and you think you've been doing it for 15 minutes, and you'll look at a clock, and it'll be like 4 minutes, you know?
Right, right.
So we were just like coming up with a couple themes. Basically, Neil got asked to do it. He called me. He knew a bass player. I knew a drummer. We called those people. We just got them in the studio. 2 days. And because the songs were so long, we never listened back. So honestly, like, I had no idea what we had done until Neil and I went to the Fare Thee Well shows in California.
Right.
And we were just hanging out there, and they played it over the PA as they were supposed to, but they played it like really loud,
mm-hmm.
like surprisingly loud. And that was the first time we'd really heard it.
Wow.
Like, it was because we didn't get a chance to listen back. It was like, you know, trying to record 6 hours of music in 2 days. If you listen back to everything you're doing, you're not going to make it.
Right.
So
right.
We didn't even really know if anything we had done was any good. And, we didn't expect anything to happen from it at all. We just thought, cool, it's going to be
a one-shot deal.
Yeah, just like it'll be played there, and then that's it. Like, okay. And then people started kind of bugging out about it.
Yeah.
And Neil and I heard it, and it was kind of loud. And we looked around, and like 70,000 people were kind of like boogieing down. And we went like, uh-oh, like, something's going on here. Like, whoa. Right. And then we ended up getting, I mean, it was like the most serendipitous thing. This never happens in the music business.
Right.
Especially the people like my age that came up when it was, you know, yeah, when there were actually record companies with lots of money and
right, right.
you'd have to go out and people would like hunt for bands and find you and take you to dinner and try and, you know, convince you they're the ones you have to sign with. And you do all these special shows for record companies and get all nervous because the president's sitting in the back like eyeing you with their arms crossed and all this stuff. So like record companies are kind of done. That doesn't really happen as far as I know anymore.
Right.
And we weren't expecting anything. We actually got a record deal out of it and a chance to make this record. So it's been like the most serendipitous thing ever. Like no one tried.
Right. And then following the record, you're touring and you're not touring, but you're doing, you know, select dates and you have this band together. And then on top of that, you have, you know, your quote unquote normal life with the CRB and the other various projects that you're on. So, I mean, you're a busy guy doing all of these things. And I'm curious how the next record, Let It Wander, came to be. I know I spoke to Neil a couple times over the last couple of years and he's teased it, but I'm curious to know how this record really came to be.
We just had some time that everyone had a window in their schedule, and we knew we wanted to keep ourselves on the map because the first thing was cool, but we didn't get a lot of chances to back it up. So we're trying to keep them people, you know, keep ourselves kind of current.
Right.
And so that there's something out there. So we just kind of thought, all right, let's get back in the studio. We have no idea what we're going to do, but let's just get back in and make some noise just so we have something to be like, hey, everybody, you know, we're still around. We're still here. We didn't disappear off the face of the earth. And there were a couple ideas I had and a couple ideas Neil had, just real kind of bare bones things. And we just did what we do, which is sit in a room and, you know, kind of play on a theme for a while. And it just kind of falls together. The players are great. Mark's great. Dan's great. Neil, it's
awesome.
It's easy. It's really, really easy thing to do. There's, like I said, there's nothing. The only thing that's hard about this band is trying to figure out time to do it.
Right.
That's really it. Other than that, it's like super easy. So cool to hang out. Everyone gets along really well. It's only four people. There's no vocal. There's no singer thing to deal with, that whole aspect of stuff. Everything sounds good.
But there is some songwriting. I mean, you don't go in there, I would assume, you have ideas. Do you put those ideas together beforehand, or is it a matter of, well, Neil has some lines and some riffs that maybe he'll include here, or maybe he'll include in the next track, and Adam has some ideas, and Dan, we just want you to, you know, hold it down with a certain line, or is it just really a free for all?
For this one, there was a couple of ideas that I had that were kind of fully formed, but done super last minute, just kind of sitting. I mean, I literally took a day to be like, wait a minute, we're about to go do a record. I should probably like come up with some things, some ideas to throw around.
Right.
So I took a day, just sat at home and came up with some cool stuff. And it was pretty much that simple. We had a show in, I guess the show was in, we had a little tiny tour in January where we played in Terrapin and stuff. And we did one rehearsal for that. And in that rehearsal, I think we came up with two. I had a couple of ideas that were very sketchy. And something just kind of came out of that rehearsal completely out of the blue.
Right.
And then I would think about the chord changes in my head and be doing stuff, and melodies would kind of pop up, and I would jot them down on my phone.
Right.
And that's kind of it. It was, we basically just say, this is the pocket, this is the idea, this is the feel. Let's just kind of mess around with it for a bit till something happens. And because we seem to have a very good, very good mental connection with these four people. So it really is very easy. It was surprisingly like, you know, holy shit. Like, okay, really? Like, now we got a tune and we got to overdub on this. We actually had a chance to work on this one, you know, because the last one we didn't. Like I said, we just recorded it.
Yeah.
And didn't even hear it back. Didn't know. Didn't even really mix it. We just sent roughs to Kreutzmann's kid.
Yeah.
And they just used those roughs. And then people freaked out. And Rhino said, "We got to do something with this." So then we went back in and actually mixed some stuff and picked. You know, ooh, it's really starting to rain. Wow.
Wow. Sorry.
No. It's great. I love rain. I live in LA, so come on.
Hmm.
Everything came together really fast, and we got a chance to listen back and actually make some choices, redo stuff.
Yeah.
We went back in and did a whole overdub session where Neil and I got to kind of really work on melodic lines and get our soloing things together. It's much more involved than the first record.
I don't want to take away anything from the other players on the record, but I think that if Adam McDougall was going to make a solo record, I bet it would sound a lot like this record. I bet it would sound a lot like Let It Wander.
I think in particular this time that was a little bit of what happened. I think I had a bunch of ideas.
Okay.
Because I spent that day doing stuff. I just kind of... There was, I think I was the one coming to the table with stuff. Neil did too. But I think it was very much nobody knew what was going to happen. So, and if you give me a chance to overdub on stuff with all my toys,
right,
I end up being like that anyway.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the toys because, and I want to go through the tracks, but before we do, I want to ask about how many different bass tools. I mean, with all the electronics now. I understand that you can make sounds out of virtually everything, but there's Mini Moog for sure, Clav for sure,
yes,
Fender Rhodes for sure, which I appreciate probably more than anybody else on the planet except somebody who plays a Fender Rhodes. What else? Is there just straight ahead piano at all?
No, I didn't hear piano.
Right.
No, it's Mini Moog, clavinet, Fender Rhodes, B3, and a little bit of a Juno 60, which we didn't actually use that much. Okay. A lot of the mixing process was actually, we kind of shot ourselves in the foot. We were so happy that we had time to overdub that Neil just kind of laced everything up and was like, this is amazing. And then I listened back when we were trying to mix it and was like, man, like 80% of this shit has to go.
Too much.
You have to find like the theme and the right thing and edit. So there was a lot of Juno 60 on it for a while until we just kind of thinned it out. It was a thinning out process. These tracks were like heavily overdubbed on just because we hadn't had the chance last time. I think we just went a little too crazy on it. So it actually took more time. The most time it took this record, the most time consuming part of this record was actually undoing everything.
There are 7 tracks on the record. I think that's accurate. And I have gone through it several times, and I can't lie. I sent your publicist a note saying how much I fucking love this record, and I put out a tweet and a Facebook post earlier today because I'm not throwing smoke up your ass. I really think this is a brilliant record. But let's go through the tracks, and you know, I have some notes, and if you want to comment on any of it, feel free. Or if I miss something, that'd be really cool. So the record opens with On My Mind, and it has this real AM Gold throwback 70s vibe in an easy rock kind of way. And I think a lot of that comes through in the Fender Rhodes. It is really melodic. And I would assume that those are some of the lines that you were thinking about when you had some of those ideas, because those aren't ideas that you just jam and come together with.
What happened with that is, Neil came up with the sort of one chord jam and the changes that have the melody over them.
Mm-hmm.
That was me. I came up with some changes, and then I was up north doing something, I think with Phil or something like that. And I had a practice keyboard in my room because I'm trying to get Grateful Dead songs in my head and stuff.
Right.
And, that melody literally just popped out. Mm-hmm. I just played those changes just to think about, to get my mind off of the Grateful Dead for a second. I just thought, all right, I'm just going to play these changes I have and see what they are.
Uh-huh.
And that melody just, like, it just popped out. It was one of those kind of blue sky moments. It just happened, and I played it into my phone, and that was it. Yeah, that's
gorgeous. We mentioned Chuck D off the top, and the second track on the record is one for Chuck. And I'm listening to the record, and Chuck D comes on, and I'm like, what the?
Yeah, right? Can you believe we almost didn't use that?
That's silly.
I know. Like, we almost didn't use it, and then we were like, it's kind of cool. Why don't we? I mean, we thought it was really cool, but I guess we kind of thought, well, you know, we're an instrumental band. Is it going to be too, like, too specific, like something that you hear once and you think is really cool, but if you actually have a record and you play it over and over again, is that going to get old? And we thought it probably would get old, so we said, all right, we'll just put it on the vinyl but not the digital. And then at some point Neil was like, wait a minute guys, shouldn't we just fucking use this thing?
Yeah,
like, are we being stupid? And we all went like, yeah, we're being totally stupid. Use it for everything, it's amazing. So
I'm waiting for a remix dance club hit. I mean, I can't see why that thing can't be remixed. It's so funky, and the clav parts, and you know, even the lead guitar lines are so clean, and Dan does a great line with the bass, with bass. I mean, that could be, and because Chuck D is on it only for, what, two or three seconds, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know why that couldn't be. So if you're listening out there, EDM people or DJs or whatever, one for Chuck. Let's make these guys some more money. I think that could be easily a remix dance club hit. Of course, what do I really know about dance club hits?
I agree. I mean, that's how I wanted to mix that song. When we were doing the mixing process, we had a show at the Belly Up in San Diego, and I was like, let's pump it over the stereo, like over the PA as loud as we can, because that's how I intend this song to be. Like, I want the bass to be really big. I want it to pop. I want it. So that was definitely a thing.
It's great.
It's a dance. It's everything's dance.
Yeah.
It's all dance. And that was him coming in the studio, because our engineer, he lives in Ventura, and he uses our engineer to do his vocals. Mm-hmm. So he'll just come in and lay his vocals at that studio. And he just came in one day while we were tracking and was listening to us mess around, and was like, man, you guys cool. Like, that's real musicians, real players. That's the jam. It's great. And because him and our engineer have a good relationship, I guess our engineer approached him and said, would you be willing to just kind of introduce the song? Wow. And we already were calling it One for Chuck, because that was the tune we were working on when he
showed up,
walked in.
Oh, so very serendipitous.
And yeah, so he actually, our engineer played it for him when he came in to do some vocals. He was like, hey, man, this is the song that, you know, that we actually named a song after you. Here it is. And he heard it and was like, man, I love this. So I'll do whatever it takes. So hopefully he won't sue us.
Did you have a chance to reminisce about New York growing up? And all? I mean, he's a little bit older than us, but certainly, you know, he is a New York icon, right? So did you have a chance to?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't actually. We it was very
brief.
It was very quick, and I was very starstruck. I mean, yes, yeah. New York, I'm 44, so like Public Enemy, when I was in high school, that was
the jam.
That was huge, yes. And his voice is so unmistakable and, like, undeniably, like, as soon as you hear it, you know exactly who it is.
Just cool.
So,
just cool.
Yeah, super cool. I actually, like, rewind that intro a lot just to hear him do it. I never thought that would ever happen. And it's like in a jam scene.
Right.
And
right.
I think jam bands are usually, like, leaning towards Grateful Dead references or other jam band references or Fish or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So I just love the fact that it's completely, like, not
right
what you would ever expect would happen in this scene.
Which
so
is,
I love
which
that.
Is great, little, which is great, yeah. Immovable Object is atmospheric at times. These jams just seem more purposeful. And that isn't to take away anything from the first record. It just seems like you're getting somewhere in all of these jams. And again, I don't know if that's during the overdub phase or if that's, you know, cleaning the fat or whatever else, but everything seems more purposeful. And again,
well, having instead of having to make 5 hours or 6 hours of music in 2 days, you know, we actually had almost 2 weeks, including the overdubs and everything. I think we did 2 4-day sessions or something, so that's like 8 days. Well, whatever. Which is a lot more than we had last time, and a lot less material to do.
Uh-huh.
You know, we really only had to get two vinyls together, which is, I don't know, it's 20 minutes aside, so 80 minutes, hour and a half tops of music instead of six. So
right.
Definitely more focused, because we had the time to do it.
The jams are so layered and pacey. I mean, there feels, and again, this speaks to this idea of having, you know, you're not putting out 6 hours worth of music or whatever. It does seem that the jams have more pace to them, but within that, there is so much layer and texture.
Yeah, and the Movable Object is actually, I wrote that, and it was because, if you know, this is really muso-y, but if you notice, the melody never changes.
Right.
Same melody.
Yeah.
All the time. It just never moves. And then the chords move around it. The band kind of moves around the thing, but the melody itself in the head just stays the same. So that's the name. That's why it's a movable object.
I'm going to blow this, but I'll try.
Halicarnassus?
Halicarnassus, yeah. I have a daughter named Hallie, and we call her Halitosis, but I think I'm going to change her name to Halicarnassus now. Yeah, it is terrible, but, you know. She didn't know when she was young when it was, and now that she does, she owns it. So anyway, it is a lot more like the first record. I think if there's a track on this record that's more like the first record. It is this one. Lots of huge riffs from Neil with so many twists and turns. But you too. I mean, there's some shiny clavinet parts with that funky undertone. And then you change into this. It's very short and it's very brief, but there's this Beatle-esque break that happens a couple times.
Do you know what I'm talking about? Yeah, the descending. Yeah. Yeah, I do. Yeah, chromatic descension. Yeah.
And then back in. And then back in for more jammy goodness. I mean, it's just...
And do you know why that song is called that?
Well, I know that it's it's a Greek town, and it's I did look it up. It's about death.
It's one of the seven wonders.
Right.
And that song is in seven.
Ah. See, that's why...
So I was sitting on my couch one night, and I just thought, we were trying to name these tunes, and we always come up with really stupid names and, like, all this stuff. And because it's not, you know, we take this band very seriously, but not in the way that other bands take themselves seriously. So it doesn't, you know, like song titles to us.
Right.
It's a little bit more than like the jazz thing. Like, you know, some jazz songs have these kind of kooky titles. And it's just like, you got to find a name for the tune. Like, we got to name it something. Like, all right, cool. You know? And so this one, I was sitting there, what can we do? And I thought, it's in seven. So what comes in sevens? And then seven wonders. And I looked them all up, and that one was the most interesting. So there you go.
And now my daughter has a new nickname, which is great. So thank you. But again, it builds on these new themes, but it again has something that holds it together, which is so cool. Tacoma Narrows, I was thinking about whether or not if Parliament and the Meters had a child or did some kind of compilation together. My initial note was Meters tune on crack. But it's just funky, funky, funky. And your influences, the band's collective influences, are just so near impossible to pick them out. Am I close with that Meters idea?
And I think Meters, sure. With Funkadelic and Parliament, that's my jam.
Right.
I mean, that's Bernie Worrell is kind of my all time hero keyboard player.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's always in the back of my mind. I really came up on that. I was trying to be a jazzer as a kid and didn't practice enough. I was too lazy to actually be any good at it. And once I heard Funkadelic, I kind of went, whoa, like Bernie Worrell's kind of like Thelonious Monk on acid.
Right.
You know, like he just has this humor to all his lines, but they're also serious. It's not like outward. It's not silly. Nothing's silly. It's just kind of funny. Like Monk does that too. It's like, it's not silly.
It's
kind of hilarious at times, but not in like a spoofy, silly, stupid way. It's a really deep,
right,
spiritual, emotional connection. Yeah, super intent that's deep and kind of dark, but also hilarious.
Speaking of hilarious, Electric Chair, not that that's hilarious, but again, coming up with names for these songs.
That was Dan. That was Dan's idea.
It moves, and it's so vibey, and again, the Fender Rhodes lines, again, are so prominent. I mean, this is a rhetorical question because you do only have two hands, but, I mean, and now that I know that there's some overdubbing going on, I get it, but how many instruments are you able to play, like, two things at once? I know you can, but it seems like you're playing three or four things at once, and I guess that's where the overdubbing comes in, right?
Yeah, that's the overdubbing. On the floor takes, the original stuff, pre-overdubs, I probably was on two or three keyboards top, and I wasn't doing much at the same time. I'm not that ambidextrous. My left hand is pretty much an asshole. I wish it wasn't. I mean, I wish I'd put more time and patience and care into taking care of it and nurturing it, but I just haven't. So
right.
But I can do passable two keyboard things at the same time. But because we could overdub, I pretty much chose to sort of say, you know, what's the theme here? What's the important keyboard? And just kind of stick to that and make it good, because I knew I'd be able to go over and do other stuff on top, which we couldn't do on the last record.
Ticket to Helix. Is that an ode to the band Helix? Because there are some of these corporate 70s rock vibes in a subtle way, but they do exist. Am I missing the mark on that or am I hearing things that just came to be because I thought of the band Helix?
I didn't know about that. I'm pretty sure Dan found that, or maybe Neil. It's a star.
Right, yeah.
Helix,
I get it.
And NGC's whatever. And I think that NGC's also Neil's initials. So that was kind of like what told it. They found it. It got Neil's initials in it, and then it's just...
So it has nothing to do with that prog rock band of the 70s. Got it.
No, but I wish it did.
It is the trippiest song on the record. I mean, it's quite trippy, and there's this long pause, not pause, but where, you know, it's very quiet for, a good 2 minutes at the back end, and then you come back and just rage.
Yeah. That song, I'm actually really proud of the space in there. Because the actual tune itself, with all the people playing with the melody, is really only about like 10% of the song. The rest of it's just kind of space.
Right.
Like ambiguously atonal and non-time space, it's hard to do that, especially if you don't, I mean, people study how to do free music like that, and none of us, except Mark. Mark is actually probably the most studied of the people. He's actually very schooled in his work. But we managed to do like a pretty legitimate free music bit for almost like 10 minutes or something.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
It's really cool.
So yeah, and getting to pretty much nothing. And I was worried about that when we were mixing it. I was thinking, oh my God, there's actually a moment where people are probably going to think the song's over.
Right.
Because there's literally kind of just space, like full space. And then we just went, you know what? Screw it.
And then you come back.
If it'll fit on one side of a record, it will. It'll fit. It's like 19 minutes long. So it'll fit. So we just said, leave it. And I'm glad we did because it's cool. I mean, you know, obviously people can fast forward or
get
to the next tune, but like if you really want to sit there with a joint and get into some strange
things,
sounds, and it's there for you.
You know, even though the jams are a little bit longer in some places, not the jams, but the songs themselves are a little bit longer, I don't get the impression that people are just going to fuck off in the middle of a song or skip to the next song. I really feel like people are going to put it on at night or, you know, when they want to trip out or whatever, or just have it on during the day as I have over the last 2 days, and just really listen intently. Because it is really, again, really cool. Like, it's really cool. So
I think that people used to tell me when people would come up and say stuff about the last record, they would usually mention things like, it's my favorite driving record, or I love to clean my apartment to this record, or it's something. I kind of thought we were like the elevator music for stoners, kind of.
That's perfect. But again, like it's you said, it's like 19 and a half minutes, but except for when it gets really quiet, you don't really think it's that long. I mean, you really don't. And same with Halicarnassus. You don't really feel that the length of the song because the jams are so tight and they move along in a pretty brisk pace. I know that we talked about, and I'm not going to keep you too much longer because I know you.
No, I'm fine. I got nothing. I'm set up. It's pouring rain here. Nothing we can do. I'm sitting on the bus. We're cool.
I'm curious about other influences, and you know, we mentioned the Meters, and we mentioned Parliament Funkadelic. I'm curious about Steely Dan, and obviously,
I love Steely Dan. I love Donald Fagen.
Okay.
What a writer! Oh my God!
Right. So a lot of that '70s vibe, the light rock vibe or the soft rock vibe that I talked about at the beginning, is very present. And I don't know if it's because of, you know, subconsciously your influences are coming through, or it's the instrumentation, but there are lines in the music that are very Steely Dan, and more specifically, very Donald Fagen. Is that?
Oh, fucking hey, thank you. Yeah, I love The Night Fly is one of my favorite records. I mean, he's just his I know we don't have lyrics and stuff, but if I was to ever write lyrics, my favorite people are Randy Newman and Donald Fagen. I mean, of course, just that kind of cynicism and humor behind stuff, that dark, dark cynicism. It's amazing. Fagen is incredible. And there's a lot of more colored chords on this. I think because of some of the bits that I had sort of actually sat down to write. Because on the last record, there was no preparation at all. At all. We just literally walked in and kind of said, like, cool, here's a bunch of Grateful Dead tunes. Let's, like, listen to the like a bit of the Grateful Dead tune and not copy it at all, but just kind of think about what the vibe is. The tempo or something, and, like, try and do that. And that's how we did the first record. And this one, we weren't trying to reference anything, and because I had come in with some ideas, and Neil had too, the ideas I came in with, because I'm a keyboard player, a lot of the chords are a lot more colored. There's a lot of major sevens, or, you know, just more, there's more, there's like guitar chords, and then there's like keyboard chords, you know. I think there's a thing, and I think they're
it's so true.
And because Fagen is, Fagen's a keyboard player, so when he writes, he's and he's really harmonically advanced. Like, super, his harmonic stuff is it's full jazz. That's how he writes. So I don't know all that stuff as well as I would like to, but just being a keyboard player, you end up knowing that stuff because, I mean, I went to school, I know a bit. So when it comes to writing, I won't just be like, it's a C chord, it's like, oh, it's a C flat five, whatever, it's there's actual colors there. So I really appreciate that you would say that. That's awesome.
I mean, I think there are others who have said similar things about your playing more generally, but certainly on this record. This record can get racked in so many different places. If we were racking it in a conventional record store, and I'm sure that the people at Rhino think about those things, and you guys don't necessarily, but it really could, it could sit very nicely in a like a jazz, in a jazz kind of room, right? I mean, I don't think there's anything too non-esoteric or not too crazy that it couldn't fit in either a rock rack or a jazz rack. I mean, it really is. It's a, because it's instrumental, probably more than anything, it really could fit in a jazz sort of world.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I actually had a sit down with our representative from Rhino, who's really rad, and she was thinking on similar lines. She was sort of saying, you know, we're kind of pigeonholed here a bit in this Dead jam world, but like, it really isn't that kind of a record. And like what, cause she was trying to figure out the whole Spotify and all that stuff. Cause they, there's all these algorithms that'll be like, if it's similar to this, then they'll find you this.
Right.
And she was like, I want to branch it out. Cause right now it's just kind of in this, if you like the Grateful Dead, you'll like these guys. And like, but actually this record doesn't sound anything like, I mean, maybe the spirit of the freedom of music is there, but so she was trying to figure out how to reach a broader audience, and I was, not to toot our own horn here, but I was like, look, man, there's playlists that have sort of like that funkier kind of Herbie Hancock 70s stuff.
Yeah.
Like, we could be tagged into that. Like, whatever, you know, you get tagged, you get, the algorithm finds you on these things. I agree with you. I don't consider any of us to be competent jazz players at all, but it is instrumental, and it does kind of do a little bit of that Herbie instrumental kind of, you know, mid-70s Headhunters vibe a little bit. And
I think if you're a fan of Charlie Hunter, I think if you're a fan of Medeski, Martin, and Wood, I think if you're a fan of Robert Walter, I don't think any of, and again, I mean, this speaks to a lot of it being, organ or piano based, but I don't think it's out of place amongst, you know, Herbie Hancock or Medeski or even some of Charlie Hunter's stuff. Like, I don't think it's out of place, and it's not out of place if it's galactic. Like, it's not, and I know those are all, you know, to a certain degree, jam band compatriots, but it's not out of place. It's closer, I think, in my mind, to that than it is to you guys being Grateful Dead, for this project anyway, Grateful Dead or CRB or early Crow
absolutely.
Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, and what's super rad about how it's gone over is we got really lucky. Like, the Dead community's really accepted us.
Uh-huh.
Which is really cool, because they're a really cool community to have as an audience.
Mm-hmm.
They're very forgiving, and they want to see stuff done without a net. You know, they don't want the same thing ever done twice.
Yeah.
They are sort of like the jazz aficionados of rock in a weird way. Like, they expect their music to be consistently evolving and never be the same.
Right.
If you do the same set list or the same song the same way, people actually get pissed at you. So it's like, it's perfect, you know, it's perfect for us, because we approach this music as jazz players do. Like I said, I'm not saying we play jazz at all, but just the idea that you have a head.
Right.
And you play the head, and then you kind of just take it from there. And there is no time limit. There's no real, you know, there's forms you can kind of follow if you want. And if you just want to get off the forms, everyone can just kind of look around and say, cool, we're just going to go here for a bit. And then as long as you make your way back to the head and sew up the tune at the end, you're done. And to me, that's kind of what the best jazz records do, you know.
Totally.
You assert a theme, and then you build upon that theme, build upon it, and build upon it until things start to naturally evolve and change and change and change, and then you make your way back to the theme, and then you're done. You know, and that's kind of how this works. So the Dead people, we got lucky with that. We really did. This is like the luckiest band I think I've ever been in, for sure. Definitely the luckiest band I've ever been in.
Wow, and that's saying something, because you're in, the other band that you're with for, it seems like an eternity through the fall, at least. I mean, that's your bread and butter.
Yeah. Tell my fiance that. Holy shit, she's mad.
So when do you tour this record? I mean, without getting, you know, family and friends upset that you're on the road, these songs...
Without doing that, that's... I've completely
impossible.
Upset my fiance by doing this. Yeah, it's impossible.
Yeah, right.
But you know, she's cool, and she knows that this is. I mean, Cats is a real band. You know, we everything is split. There's no like. I mean, Neil is a de facto leader, of course, because it was his initial call. But like, doesn't, you know, everyone's equal. Everything is cool. Manager lets you know about everything, sends you spreadsheets about all, you know, what's going on. It's a real, you know, we all signed the record deal. It's a real thing, you know. So she gets it. She knows that's the important thing, because it's ownership, you know.
Right.
I own this. We all own this. This mm-hmm. is our baby, you know. If we can start getting it together and getting some more time to do it and get out there on those festival scenes and start making, you know, some decent guarantees and stuff, then we, you know, we get that. Like, we own this. This could actually, hopefully, I believe it can turn into something that is a...
The problem is,
you know,
is that you...
That's my,
the problem is you have that other guy who's so prolific and wants to make music. Aren't you working on another
record with that
guy?
We actually did one in June.
Yeah.
And we're already playing the new songs, which are rad. The record is cool. Last record we did was really great.
Yes, really good. Agreed.
It's cool, but it's a completely different thing and a completely different, well, the mainly different audience, I think.
Uh-huh.
Actually, in a weird way, the Cats audience tends to be a bit younger.
Right.
I think there's still a lot of throwback Crows people for the CRB that, you know, kind of reliving their 90s college time. and CRB, we managed to get some really cool after show gigs for Fish and for Dead & Co.
Right.
And did really well. And those people are, a lot of those Fish people and the Dead & Co. people, they're young. You know, most of the Dead & Co. people haven't actually ever been, you know, they didn't start getting into this music until Jerry was already dead. So
yeah,
it's like, there's a bunch of young people checking this out, which is nice. It's nice to see, like, look out at a Cat show and see
that's great
kids. Yeah, you know, and everybody dances, which is kind of my whole trip being from P-Funk. Like, that's all I want to do is just play. Like, I just want to play dance music all night and have people have a party. That's really my whole goal in life. It's sad, but true.
Hey, thanks for spending the time. I'm way over any time that I thought I had allotted to me, and I appreciate the time, and I appreciate the record, and your thoughtfulness with going through the music with me, and all of that. So, thank you.
You're very welcome.
All right, man. Be well, okay?
All right. You too.
Adam was extremely generous with his time and a total pro, not just on stage, but also during this interview. We went into so much detail about the songs and the inner workings of the band, and he was so forthright and honest. We hope you enjoyed listening to the interview as much as we did preparing it. As Adam mentioned, he is touring quite extensively throughout the fall with CRB, but there will be select dates coming up for Cats, and of course the album Let It Wander comes out August 17th. For more information, you'll want to check out their website at circlesaroundthesun.com. You may also be intrigued to check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/thesoundpodcast for a special TSP Cats live performance playlist that we've assembled just for you. Before we leave you, have a listen to One for Chuck featuring Chuck D off the top.
Chuck D here. One for Chuck. Cats. Circles around the sun. Come on.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. The Sound Podcast is part of the Osiris Network. For more, visit OsirisPod.com. Thanks for listening. Osiris.